mess, man. I have all this fucking shit everywhere. What the hell? Like, when did we turn professional?
I don't know.
What the fuck?
When you busted out with all this stuff.
I had books. I have highlighters. I have pens. I have paper.
And this is coming from the woman that is so anti-outline.
Yeah, but this is a really serious topic.
So whenever this is a serious topic, I can make an outline?
You can never make an outline.
Why not?
Because your outlines are poo-poo.
Well, whatever.
Here's the problem is you got so used to making outlines before when you had to literally write everything down that needed to be discussed, everything, that it made it difficult for you now to be just like, an outline is loose. It's loose. It's like a table of contents. And then we get into the chapters later. And yours are tight like your asshole.
Tight like my asshole.
Tight like your asshole.
Wow. So we should probably tell people who we are. I'm about tight assholes and shit. Just saying, if the world's going to know that I have a virgin asshole, maybe they should know who I am.
Well then.
I am Service Slut.
And I am Insidious Muse.
And we have a fantastic guest with us.
We have a guest.
Yes.
Very last minute. And she can introduce herself.
Yes.
Oh, I'm Tamara.
Yay.
And I do not have a virgin asshole, so.
Yeah, well, most of our friends don't. Most of our friends have actually pretty whorish assholes, so we're cool with that.
Almost whorish. Not quite all the way whorish yet.
Work on it.
I am.
It's fantastic. Yeah,
it's one day at a time.
Or whatever. I'm not going to say what I was going to say. Let's move on. One cock at a time. What? What do you want me to say?
There you go.
So our topic is a pretty big topic, and it's pretty heavy. Last week we had a really heavy show.
Yeah.
So you know we're just gonna bring you guys all down. So fuck you. It's Sunday, and we're talking about in BDSM and in DS relationships, is this abuse?
Yeah.
And
no.
For me to clarify. I'm not talking about all play. I'm not talking about, you know, the question of is BDSM in general abuse. It's about those of us that have accepted this lifestyle, are in this lifestyle, are active participants within it, within any given situation, when and if the threshold towards abuse is crossed. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And it's a really, it's a muddy line, in my opinion. It's a muddy line because it's completely dependent upon the parties. It's completely dependent upon negotiations. It's completely dependent upon often some random emotional red buttons that we might not even know existed or weren't aware that they were going to be crossed until they were crossed. And how it's handled after that. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, people learn their limits by going beyond them. And sometimes that means that you kind of get an emotional scar at some point. And sometimes it means you can't do a certain kind of play for a little while. But the most important point is how it's handled afterwards, you know, whether it's actually acknowledged. So we have Tamara on because she has been a domestic violence crisis counselor. So this seems kind of fucking perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And she did research. How many of our guests have ever done research?
Well, no, some of them may have. We don't know that. I can't remember.
None of them brought in papers. I'm just saying. She got brownie points.
Oh my God. Just because you have all your stuff spread out and she has all her stuff spread out, that's why you're like, popping my collar and stuff.
No, I'd have been just as impressed if she had her shit and I had nothing.
I don't have an outline.
I don't have an outline. Well, I actually did. I emailed an outline.
No, you didn't.
Why don't you look in your email then, girly? Because I shared a Google Doc with you. Biatch.
Nope, you didn't.
Anyway, so as I was saying, so how about if we start with you, Tamara? Tamara.
Tamara.
I was having a conversation in the car about is she Tamara or is she Tamara? Because I knew a girl back in the day who was like, it's Tamara, you know, air as an airhead. And I thought that's no.
Well, she was pronouncing it wrong. Obviously.
No, she was stupid. So there's that. But it got kind of drilled into my head. You had some interesting things. We could talk about, I think everybody can accept an understanding of actual domestic violence in a vanilla setting. Interestingly enough, if you go by various state standards, it's different.
It is.
It's different.
You are correct.
If, you know, in some states, if you have not filed a police report, it is not domestic violence. And then in some states, such as in California, domestic violence includes emotional, verbal, and mental abuse. which I believe is definitely equally and almost always accompanies the violence, the actual physical violence. And the interesting thing is, when we were talking, as we discussed last week, I was an emotionally abused woman. And so I have all these books. I have lots of books about the emotionally abused woman. So many books, which didn't help me at all. So in one of them, there's this little checklist. Are you being emotionally abused? And I read it off to the girls. And I said, so here's the checklist. It may surprise you, but if you have been exposed to any one of these things on this list, you may be being emotionally abused. So I will read the list now, and our listeners will get a chuckle. The list includes domination, verbal assaults, abusive expectations, emotional blackmail, unpredictable responses, constant criticism, character assassination, gaslighting, or mind-fucking as I call it, constant chaos, and sexual harassment, which is a wish list for a lot of submissives that I know. So when we're talking about, some sort of abuse in the kinky world, the lines become even harder to discern, because if this is what the vanilla world would say is abuse, well, what does it take, or does it, as some might say, that for one to be abused in the kinky world? And so now I will throw that out to you ladies, and I will stop talking and drink my coffee.
Oh, no, please.
Well, I think the first thing that I want to say is we don't want to be trapped in the thing in just considering heterosexual relationships when we talk about abuse. I think a lot of people just go straight to a dom submissive where man, woman,
right.
And it crosses genders and it crosses sexual identities. So it could be anything. So I don't want to make sure we're not leaving anybody out. But what I did is I did some own research, and let's just talk first what the definition of abuse is, just straight up, not legally, just what it is. Abuse is a pattern of behavior when one person tries to control the thoughts, beliefs, or actions of a partner, friend, or any other person close to them. Abuse is sometimes also referred to as domestic violence, battering, and intimate partner abuse. Abusers may use a number of ways to control their partner, none of which are acceptable in the context of a consensual, negotiated S&M relationship. These actions cannot be stopped with a safe word and can include physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, economic abuse, outing, which you and I just talked about, and defending any of these non-consensual actions as the way real S&M works. And I know that in my, I spend a little bit of time on FetLife, not a lot. I do see a lot of instances where submissives are being asked to do things that they're not comfortable with, that are limits for them, to prove that they are submissive. That is a perfect example of abuse.
Yeah. It's interesting because you guys are subs, right?
Yes.
Tell me you're a sub, I assume so. I don't know why.
If I'm not, somebody's listening going, what? No.
I was like, what did I sign up
He's
for?
He's scratching his head, yeah.
And I hear these stories about these things that are happening, and especially when they end up getting posted on FetLife or Twitter or whatever, blog posts. And I always think, and you too might be able to answer this question, at the moment that this assignment, this task is given, and you feel in your gut that it's not right, what goes on for you? I mean, do you consider negotiating? Do you talk about that you're not comfortable with it? Do you express that this violates some limit? I mean, what do you say? What goes on?
I think there's there's this internal conflict, because part of you is just like, but I love my D type. I want to show my devotion in any way that I can. And if it means doing something completely ridiculous, I will do it. But then again, I'm humiliation whore, so whatever the fuck. It doesn't matter if something's ridiculous, I'll do it. in fact, the more ridiculous, the better. But anyways, whatever. And so there's definitely a part of you that, you want to show your service. You want to show, you kind of want to ruffle your feathers. But then there's that other part of you that, the grounded part of you, that for a minute thinks, wait, this is a little bit uncomfortable. Is this, and this goes back to our topic from last week. Is this me pushing my boundaries a little bit? Or is this completely outside the zone of what is okay for me?
Right.
And it sucks. If you have no one to talk to, no one to kind of bounce it off of, you figure it out yourself. And I'm lucky. I'm blessed that that has never happened with you. I don't ever feel like, you know, I'm being wronged in this like horrible way. But I think that if it ever got to that, I think the moment when there starts to be that conflict, I mean, forget like what happens afterwards, but the moment that you start to consider, wait, this is kind of questionable. I think that's the moment of reflection. I think that's that moment where you have to take a step back and almost remove yourself from your role, whether it be submissive, slave, whatever, and deal with it as partners and have a communication about it. I think the worst thing to do is not talk about it. That you shouldn't, I don't think those things should just be assumptions.
The fantastic. And you have serious, and it might just be you, maybe it's just an S type thing, serious issues with bringing up something to me.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's great advice. That's great advice. Absolutely. And guess what? You want to know what? I have no problem with doing any of that, but I'm not an S type. I'm a D type. I say things because it needs to be said. And you and I have had this conversation on vanilla fronts where, well, you just need to say this. And you're like, but yeah. Because it goes, it's contrary to who and what you are. So although, yes, logically, that is fantastic, right? That so, you would say that.
Yeah, easier said than done.
If you were really presented with it, what do you do?
I know me personally. Oh, it would take eons before I actually talk to you about something.
Hey, by the way, I already know.
Thanks. It would take eons. It really would. It would take like something massive, just something completely earth-shattering for me to say, look, this, we need to talk about this now. And be almost like borderline, like assertive and just, you know, trying to get my point across. Because my fear is always going to be, this isn't a backfire. And I'm going to end up feeling like a fool afterwards because it probably wasn't that big a deal. And I made it so much bigger in my head.
You mean like a couple weeks ago?
But if it's important to you, I mean, it's how big of a deal you make it.
Right.
So, you know, and if it's important to you, it's about how you go at it too. If you're going to go and, you know, crazy and emotional, then sure, you're not going to make any sense. And nobody's going, right, to want to listen to you.
Right.
I mean, my situation is a little different. I'm not a humiliation whore. Please note that. And
write that down.
Yeah. I'm masochistic. Totally. So, but because we did not start out with DNS, I have a much easier time talking about it. And I have experience and he did not. So I was able to say, hey, look at this. And we negotiated a lot. We negotiate constantly. But I think for S types, you know, your immediate response is always want to please your dominant. Right. Always. You know, and I mean, there are things that he asks me to do that are silly, but I'm like, oh God, I don't want to do that. And you know, we don't stop and think why we don't want to do it. We just immediately, you know, we just want to please.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is you have to understand what your limits are. You have to ask yourself, are you doing it? You know, it is important to explore. There are things I've done now that I never thought I would do. And I'm sure there are things that now I say, no, I don't want to do that. And I'll most likely end up doing some of them. But I know for some S types, they don't have that opportunity to negotiate. I'm hearing a lot of talk from submissives that aren't allowed to have safe words. I don't understand that at all.
If you're in a relationship that has no safe words,
get the fuck out.
Yeah, even if you're a slave, I mean, there has to be some sort of safety mechanism in place. Has to.
I don't understand that.
And by the way, tops can have safe words too.
Yes, they can. We have safe words. We have signs because of subspace. So, you know, that's something that, And I trust my partner without question. And he can read me very well.
Yeah.
But I still insist on, and I didn't even have to insist. He was, you know, of course. But I am hearing a lot about that. If you're in a situation, if you're being asked to do something where that little nagging voice just doesn't go away, then you need to start thinking about it. And also, there's cycles with abuse.
Oh, yeah.
So identify the cycles. So, you know, someone who's abusive will go off on you, whether it's emotional or physical. My experience I have a background with physical abuse. So I nearly lost my life at the hands of someone else.
Wow.
So, you know, they go through a period where, you know, the abuse is crazy. They're on you all the time. It's everything. They don't trust you. They question everything you've done. They look through your clothes to see what you've been wearing. They show up at your work to see if you're really there. They talk to people. My abuser, I was in school at the time, would talk to people I went to school with to see if I was talking to other guys. And then after that happens, they go through a honeymoon phase. Mm-hmm. They're really nice. They start buying you things. They want to do everything for you, flowers, gifts. It's a cycle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you can't recognize inside yourself whether or not you're being abused, especially in a kink relationship, then look for that cycle is a big indicator, a very big indicator.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's really common in any kind of abusive relationship for, but look what, you know, they got me, because I don't know, it could be he or she. Look what they got me. They're really sorry. It's a big reason why I hate flowers. I hate them. Don't ever send me flowers. Because it reminds me of, oh, yeah, that's not going to work anymore.
She'll give you the look of death. Take note.
I'll give them away. I used to just start giving them away. So, but that's the same thing. It's one of those. It's that moment. I want to really, really, really quickly, because I mean, this is a huge topic. Before I forget what I want to say, I crossed the threshold of abuse on someone once. I was very young. It was before I knew about the lifestyle and stuff like that. And there was a guy that was an asshole. I mean, like, I did not like him at all. And he kept, you know, like, bugging me. And then, you know, he kept saying, you know, let's go out, whatever. And I was just like, fuck, what a fucking dick. I don't want to go out with him. And it ended up being just through happenstance and circumstances. There was a double date and blah, blah, whatever. Shit happens in college. And then, you know, when we were alone, he had a crop. And he's just like, you know, and I looked at it. And I love crops. You know, I worked at Disneyland many moons ago, and I happened to have a crop left over from the tour guides. And fuck, I love that shit. I used to walk around with it. I loved that even at a very young age. And so I was kind of fooling around with the crop, and he said, I bet you'd love to hit me with it. And I was thinking, yeah, I don't want to fucking hit you with it, because he was an asshole and I didn't like him. But he kept kind of goading me and asking for it. He really wanted it. And so I was like, absolutely. And I violated several things. Well, I learned several things then. I didn't necessarily violate, because I didn't know what they were. I learned several things about myself in that evening. I hit him, and I certainly, I don't think I did anything safe. I'm sure I hit him in places I wasn't supposed to. And I would not, I mean, I just kept going. I didn't stop. There were no safe words. I didn't know what a safe word was. There were, you know, and of course there was lots of pleading in the nose, but I just like that. So, you know, I think I learned I like that then. but I went too far. I know that I went too far. And he was almost in a fetal position and kind of like protecting his head. Not that I was ever hitting his head. But I was saying awful things, because you know that I can say fantastic, awful things. Mm-hmm. And back then I was much, much worse, because I didn't have a safe filter. I was cruel back then. And I like stopped. I felt like I was in some sort of strange daze. I stopped holding the crop and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? And I dropped it and I ran out and I just cried. I felt like I cried for 2 days, because it was like, it was the most horrible experience I could possibly imagine, that I did that to another human being, that I knew that I had crossed some sort of a barrier. And it was awful. And I didn't handle the end of that well because I just never called him again. So that was fantastic. So yay for that. But I remember feeling, knowing. And because of that, for me, I'm so hyper aware. I'm just, number one, I will never play with someone I don't like. And number two, I will never play when I'm upset. I don't even have conversations when I'm angry. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. I used to, and it never worked out well. If I'm angry, just give me space. I won't talk. From that perspective, I mean, I learned from seeing from that side. And maybe some people haven't crossed that barrier for themselves, so they don't understand it. But that's just from the D-type perspective. Because I think we're doing a lot of focusing on the S-type, which is great. But I think that from the D-type perspective, you have to, if there's any moment when you can recognize legitimate fear in someone's eyes versus that enjoyable fear, I think that we can play these words because we work in a different place, you know, but there's that difference where they're legitimately scared. That is something that as a top, you need to be really aware of because you need to check in because you can cross that barrier right then and you don't even know you're doing it because they're not going to say anything because they don't even know you're doing it. So if you check in, then at least you can cause a little bit of protection for both parties because it's not good either side, in my opinion.
Well, you're right. There was an occasion when I was playing with my dominant and I started to cry. It really hurt. And later on, I said to him, you know, that made me cry. And he said, I know. I'm like, well, hello. And he said, I checked in with you. I asked if you were okay, and you said yes. I was like, damn, yeah. Right, you did. And I was okay. I was just more like, didn't you see the tears? But anyway, yeah,
yeah,
he did.
The answer is yeah, I liked him.
And he liked
you. You should cry more.
Yeah.
Right. D-types out there, you get me.
Yeah. I think another indicator is also, and I'm sure that you can totally relate to this, is if you're in an abusive relationship and you one of the telltale indicators is you find yourself walking around on eggshells. There's certain things you know you shouldn't say, you shouldn't do. You find yourself hiding things, keeping secrets. That's a really big one. Yeah, someone really close to me is in an abusive relationship right now. And she went to talk to someone about it at her church. And she was told, well, just don't say those things.
Oh.
Yes. That is fantastic advice.
Wow.
Power of God will save you. And people wonder why I'm an atheist.
That is not good advice. If you have to censor yourself, if you are hiding things, you are afraid to talk about things because of fear of retribution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then,
and I think that the big point is it's not fear of what if this is the thing that crosses some lines so she or he doesn't want me to be their submissive. I'm talking to you, Nancy.
Yeah, I know.
It's that actual fear of
something is going
fear.
Bad is going to happen to
it's
you.
It's a like fear of damage.
Yes.
That's, I think, the big point.
Yes.
I think one of the most, one of the things that I think it's probably more prevalent than, you know, somebody doing, you know, this, you know, beating you beyond your limits, et cetera, is the DS relationship where the submissive is just enamored with their dominant, just under their spell completely. And their dominant is manipulating them. Or toying with them in some way that is not negotiated, is not mutually agreeable, is not, if they have a contract, not in the contract, whatever it is. And that, because in talking to submissives where they're having these kinds of things go on, the thought is, but it's my dominant. I must somehow need whatever they're giving me. My question is, when do you tell the difference between I'm not comfortable with this because it's pushing my limits, and I'm not comfortable with this because it's violating me in some way? How do you tell that difference?
I think for those individuals, that's going to be pretty tough because they're going to, most people in relationships that are being abused lack any self-confidence. They're completely insecure.
Yeah, no, they've been torn down.
No. And
it's methodical.
If they weren't insecure at the beginning, they're gone into, I mean, they really are. And so they've lost that little voice inside themselves. For me, I was very insecure, but I knew what was going on wasn't right. You know, but when it's physical, it's a little different because at some point you're just like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to die. I mean, I don't know what else to do, you know. But with emotional, I think it is a lot harder because you don't have that inner voice, that little switch that tells you. And it's unfortunately going to take one of those hit bottom moments when you're doing something that you're like, what the hell? How did I get here? I mean, you're like the lowest of lows before something flips a switch in you. And that's unfortunate. And that's kind of why I think it's really tricky in the kink world, especially with emotional. With physical, it's a little different.
Right.
You know, I think, two other factors are involved. For example, if you're a parent and your dominant is asking you to do things that infringe on those responsibilities, then that should definitely signal to you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's definitely not okay. But if you're not, you know, and there are, I hear stories all the time of S-types that are allowing all kinds of things to be done to them because some of them are just uneducated and just feel that that's part of what being a submissive is.
Right.
You know, just letting someone do whatever they want to you. And some of them are so insecure that they almost want that. That's what they want. They want to be beaten down verbally, you know, mentally, physically.
Well, and that's different.
Yeah.
Because that can be negotiated because looking at all of my books, I was like, oh, fuck, do that. Fuck, I do that.
But there are times when that's
fuck.
Not.
God damn it, Nancy, am I abusing you?
Right, but there are times when that's not negotiated.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's where it helps if the D-type is aware of who he or she is, you know, and not willing to take advantage of someone like that. You know, it's kind of funny. My very first DNS relationship was a very long time ago. And I had just gotten a divorce from my first husband, and I was not, I was really messed up. And I was really uncomfortable with the DNS thing. I was new to it. I was really uncomfortable. I wasn't really sure if it's something part of me. I wasn't really too willing to accept that side of me. And so I would start drinking. And we would see each other once a week. And I would drink knowing he was going to be coming over. And finally, after about two or three times, he was like, look, we're not going to do this. If you're going to drink, then we have a problem. It's not safe. You know, your inhibitions are lowered, which is great, but you're not aware of everything that's going on. You're putting yourself in an unsafe situation, and I'm not going to be responsible for that. Right. So it's either the wine or me. You know, and he had that talk, and I listened, and that was it for me. But it took him, you know, if I'd had somebody less scrupulous, you know, or more, you know, willing to take advantage of that, then who knows what would have happened.
Sure, or less aware of safety,
mm-hmm.
which there's a lot. And God, maybe there's more now because of 50 Shades. I mean, who knows? That's the scary
That's
part.
Scary. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I can only do this if I get drunk. Wow, imagine topping when you're drunk.
Oh, God.
No bueno.
Sorry about your kidney. I missed your backside. Yeah,
I wasn't trying to punch you in the jaw. Sorry.
Yeah, not so much.
I've been sitting here and I'm, you know, just listening to you guys are awesome. I like just sitting back and like, you guys are great. I knew you guys would get along. I just fucking knew it. But, you know, you're right. A lot of people think about submissives being the ones that are abused. But dominance can definitely,
fuck yeah,
definitely be on the receiving end of that.
Especially on the emotional, especially in the manipulation.
Exactly.
And yes, that's a big thing.
Precisely where I was going to go, because I know for myself, like, because, you know, hey, you know what? You people that follow me on Twitter, you know that I'm kind of all over the place right now.
Really? I did not get that.
Right? My crazy is totally showing. And that's a constant concern for me, that I'm being emotionally manipulative. And I don't know if, I don't know if that's a me thing, but I wonder if other submissives are ever really aware that they're doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I've definitely been on the receiving end of that more than once. More than once. It's very common. It's actually very common. And I chalk it up to like children trying to test their boundaries, for lack of a better, you know, example. I think that they're quite aware of it, because I usually call them on their shit if they're not dismissed. Because if they're dismissed, I don't give a fuck. Do whatever the fuck you want, because you're not my problem anymore. even if they go crazy, which sometimes they do. But it's a challenge, because it's not an easy thing. It'd be so much easier if I could just like put my foot down or put my fist down and be like, you know, you're gonna stop. Because it just doesn't work like that. That's just not how life works.
No.
It'd be great if it did, but it just doesn't. It takes, you know, a subtler approach to really be able to squash that kind of manipulation well. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes people genuinely won't acknowledge or be able to see it for whatever reason. Because if they were to acknowledge and be able to see it, they would have to see it everywhere in their lives. Because generally people aren't just manipulating in one section of their life. They're actually manipulators all over. And that's a different emotional situation. I happen to be a magnet for addicts and alcoholics. That's just, they are naturally attracted to me.
So are you codependent, do you think? I'm not making a judgment.
No. I'm sure. I am actually an enabler, and I make them feel good because I'm not harsh. And my father was an alcoholic. My ex-husband, although he was not using anything at any time, his behavior was definitively that of an addict. And so I've gone to like Al-Anon, which is the ones for the people that don't drink, because they're the not fun meetings, by the way, because I've been to the fun meetings and damn, I want to hang out with the addicts. You people are boring. Because I'm generally, that kind of personality is attracted to me. That kind of personality, the addict personality, is notoriously manipulative. Notoriously.
Yes, they are.
And so I generally find those people that then want to bask in the glow of me, whatever. And when I say no, they do whatever they can through whatever means of manipulation, whether it be through some sort of self-harm to get my attention, or some sort of, you know, showy dance, look at me, whatever it is. But, you know, and those are really the more overt ones. There are much more subtle ones, which can be as damaging as some of the bigger ones, but it absolutely happens. And it's one of those things that just takes time and experience to acknowledge, recognize, and be willing to do whatever you need to do. My thing is, I'm not going to tolerate it. I will turn my back on that person in a heartbeat. And that's hard. Even if it's somebody that you really care about, I can't do that. I did it for too long.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's because of your experience with it.
I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, you know, I'm a woman, and to...
No.
I know, it's hard to believe.
The boobs might have given it away.
They're looking at my breasts right now, sorry.
Well, she's kind of got the cleavage going on.
I'm totally ogling them.
I put my nipple on my blog today.
Everybody, go look at her blog.
Just a nipple. But I had to get permission to do that. And then he was like, you never let me take pictures, and now you want to... Yeah. Anyway, I was going to say, well, it hurts, but you can't see anything. I wanted to show it. So anyway, I don't know anyway. What I was going to say, I'm a woman. And so, you know, sometimes women feminists are going to be like, oh, you bitch. But we do tend sometimes to manipulate our partners in little ways. It's just how we're made, you know.
Because we're smarter than men?
Yes. Right. I mean, for showing my cleavage, obviously. If I'm going to go buy a car, I'm not going to wear, you know, a turtleneck. I mean, you know. But the spicy guy, he's impossible to manipulate, even in the little ways. Part of the reason is he's very literal. So there's no reading between the lines with him. He does not know how to do that. You can't make him guess like how you feel. You have to flat out tell him. And the nice thing about that, he's the same way. He doesn't try to make you read between the lines. He flat out tells you. So I often tell him it's one of my favorite things about him. And the thing I hate the most is that I can't make him feel bad about something. You know, I can't. I've tried. I have. And he knows that. And I can't. I always end up, honestly, the first man I've ever been involved with that I can't do that with. I'm not proud of this fact, but almost any other man I've been with, I can pick a fight with and get the man to apologize. I cannot do that with him. So, and yet I stay. But, but you know, I was doing some reading, and we've been talking a lot about what's some signs. But let's talk about what a healthy BDSM relationship looks like.
Yeah, what does that look like?
So let me read something to you. Healthy BDSM is when two or more, I like that, two or more consenting adults consent to exchange energy, power, sensations, or experiences, however extreme, in ways that fuel their mutual happiness. Right there. Mutual happiness.
Yep.
I like that.
And increase self-esteem. Another keyword, words. In a healthy BDSM relationship, all parties involved are actively invested in the well-being of each other and themselves. I think that says a lot right there. Happiness, security, and the well-being of each other.
Yeah. And it's of each other.
Yes.
Both parties.
Yes.
Have, or all parties, however many parties there are, are all equally invested and should put as much on the line as they are expecting. And I think that there is a perception that, and it's a very false perception, that somehow submissives are putting more on the line than a dominant.
As a submissive, I disagree. I mean, I completely feel both parties are completely both equally responsible. Sometimes, you know, the D type is a little bit more, and obviously, because you know, so I go to substates easily, so I'm like out of it. But yeah,
yeah. No,
I wasn't always, I didn't always realize that. There was a point in my life where I genuinely believed, I'm giving you me. I'm so awesome and I'm so this and that and you should totally take care of me. There's no reason why I should ever have to take responsibility for myself. And
I read a really great post on FetLife last night, and I think I ran into it because Shelby Cross had also commented on it. And it was about the fact that there needs to be more personal responsibility in DNS relationships on both sides.
Yeah.
And that so many people are so quick to throw blame at the D type when we have a lot of S types that are, you know, and I've never been to a dungeon or a play party or anything. So
we totally need to change this.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so, but, you know, this particular our post was written about, you know, S types coming, you know, going in and finding a D type and be like, oh, I don't care whatever you want to do to me, you know, do. And, you know, not, and then not taking any or owning any self-responsibility for what's happened to them.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't participate in the negotiation.
Yeah. So I did that once. I will admit to it. I put myself in the line of fire. I put myself in the hands of someone who did not know what they were doing. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I, because I felt like, okay, this person's going to take responsibility over me. That really put me in a spot where there were things that were done and said that were very damaging. And I didn't take the time to really think about what I wanted out of this play relationship, because that's what it was. And you know, there was a level of responsibility that I just totally gave up. And I mean, this was like, what, like 2 years ago? And I still like think about like this, it was like a series of like weeks. And I still think about it now, and there's always new things that I'm discovering about that. And thank God that I took my head out of my virgin ass, because I do think that while I'm certainly not as self-aware as I would love to be, and I still have a lot of work to do on myself, but I don't think our relationship would work if I just gave you everything and decided, hey, you're gonna, you know, I don't have to do anything.
I'm not a micromanager.
No.
That shit drives me fucking crazy.
No, and I think that, you know, a healthy relationship requires a lot of balance and being able to say, okay, I am my own responsibility. I'm my own job. You can't force me to do everything. You can absolutely force me to do the things that you'd like me to do. But there's other things. Like, you're not going to force me to get up every day and go to work. You guys, I have a new job. Yay.
Wow, congratulations.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if I can't do those things for myself, then how could I possibly expect for us to work? I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Yes, you are.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah. About the balance and the, yeah, I get that.
Well, you know, a common term that we use to describe BDSM relationships is power exchange. It's not power struggle.
Right.
It's power exchange. And that's what it is. And, you know, you hear all these things like, oh, you know, submissives really have all the power, or D-types really have all the power. That's not how it's supposed to be. Power exchange.
Yeah.
Negotiate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we don't do a lot. I mean, we do a lot of talking, Nancy and I. We don't do a lot of like negotiating now because we have a contract, and we did a lot of negotiating before. But the truth of the matter is the contract is probably fairly old at this point.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of changes.
Yeah, there has.
In limits, there's been a lot of changes. But when we do play, you know, I know her limits. I do. And I know her imposed limits and her real limits. I know that. And I also know I can read her. I can read people really well. And I know when she's done. And I know when she's not enjoying it. And it's pretty easy to tell for me anyway. Maybe not for other people, but for me. But it's one of those things where you have to take the time to get to know your partner in order to know that you're actually exchanging the energy, because the submissive has to kind of give the energy, and the dominant has to, you know, take and give. And it's like this lovely little cycle. It's kind of a lovely way it goes.
It is. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way a lot. You know, in a lot of circles.
It was just a pickup scene, which I never do, but it was just a friend at a dungeon who wanted me to top her. Well, whatever, we'll do this. And so because it was a pickup scene, it was a negotiated moment. Okay, what do you want me to do? What's okay? What's not okay? But like, what's your safe words, and how are we going to do this? So we did all that, whatever. And then in the middle of the scene, she whispers to me, I would really like to do total power exchange with you right now. And I'm like, that requires a lot more negotiating. And I was just like, all I said was, okay, because I'm not in the headspace right then, in the middle of the fucking scene, to do that and to switch it up and whatever. Because like, no, this is what we're doing, because this is what we negotiated.
This is what was on the menu, and this is what you picked.
Exactly. At that point, I am a service top at that point, because it's like, I'm not violating anybody's boundaries or limits or whatever. I'm not doing that. That's not me. I'm not going to do that. And so it's like, you know, we can talk about that another time, because that can't happen now. So it was just one of those things where time and place to negotiate, people, time and place. But do it, please. Just time and place, kids.
Not to put the gag on. Oh, wait a minute. No.
Right. I want to do wax play. By the way, I'm allergic to soy. You should have told me that. All I have is soy wax.
I remember very recently we did a yes or no list, which, you know, we talk a lot, but we hadn't actually put anything down on paper. And so I turned my list in, and he was like, it's interesting because a few things you're like, no, I haven't tried yet. Yeah, you have. I was all,
oh. When?
Oh, wow. I must have really been out of it that day. So. but I did want to touch on something else, too. I know, you know, a couple people have said, well, what do I do if I know somebody or, you know, how do how do I handle that? And I pulled something up on that that I thought was really interesting. And this this is in specifically in relation to BDSM relationships, is you need to take an approach that's about an ethics of care and empowerment rather than protection, defense, or punishment. And we need to ask, how can we best care for each other within our community? Not how can we best defend and protect ourselves. You know, it's kind of a little bit more being proactive instead of reactive. And I think that the focus that this particular individual is saying is that protection means that we're assuming someone's weak and needs someone stronger to defend their interests. And it, what that does is it creates a dependence for that weak person, and you're just perpetuating the problem. And that's kind of not what they need. And that's how the abuse started in the first place, because of that dependence. But care and empowerment means that we're going to assume the person is strong and capable, and what we need to do is give them the resources and the strength that they need to take care of themselves and give them support. And what I liked about this said, and I know we all know someone who's been. I believe the statistic I read was 3 out of every 4 people know someone who's been in an abusive relationship or is in one. And you have to ask the question, what can I do that will help prevent abuse? Not what can I do that will make me feel like a hero. Ask it again and again and again until you go as deep inside what motivates you as possible and away from anything that looks like revenge, being a hero, saving the world. and keep going there until you get about 8 or 10 answers and you know that you've gotten to the right place when you say, man, that'd be a lot of work. Because it is. It's a lot of work to support someone like that. As a survivor, I cannot even tell you one of my best friends, he went through hell with me. I mean, literally. I mean, I couldn't hold a hand. It was horrible, you know? And it was not easy for him. And it's not easy to support. It's easy to want to help. It's easy to want to be the hero.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is, when you're dealing, as you well know, when you're dealing with a victim of abuse, we're not, there's no rational reason why we go back to our abusers.
No.
But we do.
Yes.
I did. You probably did. There's no rational reason. There's no rational reason why we allow our abusers to segregate us from everything and everyone that's important to us. But we do. And those are the people that we need the most. And those are the people that I don't blame any of my friends for giving up on me. I don't blame any of them. I would have. That's 13 and a half years. That's a long time. And they all gave up, and they should have. I wasn't ready to see it, to admit to it, much less once I became aware of it. It took me, not just aware, I acknowledged and accepted that I was abused. I became aware of it about 3 years into the relationship, like really aware of it. I didn't accept it until 9 years into the relationship. And I wasn't able to do anything about it for another like 2.5 years. I just couldn't. I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't. I didn't have the strength.
And you don't, yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, you're right. That's if you want to help someone, you know, help them. But don't expect to be their savior.
No,
you because can, yeah. nobody can save you from that.
No. And, you know, as a crisis counselor, I would get calls from the same women week after week after week after week. And, you know, that my job is to listen to them and to try to talk, you know, talk them out of the situation. But that's on them, mm-hmm. you know, but that was my job. And I'm not going to lie. There are some times I was like, oh, my God, come on, get it. Can't you see, you know, but they need support and it has to happen on their terms. For me, it was either I get out or I'm dead or I die, period. Oh, sorry. I just broke something.
That's okay.
But
it's just Skid Row Studios.
But with emotional abuse, it's a little trickier. But it is. There is. You can't be the knight in shining armor.
No. And allow me to, because we're starting to run out of time. For people that are in DS relationships, I think that, you know, if you listen to the show, this is a very reasonable discussion to have with your partner. Even if it's, of course, we're not being abused. Even if you, you know, don't make fun of it. But I think both sides of the equation should sit and go, I think we need to look at this and see, are there some things, you know, based, there was last week where there was boundaries and there's this week that's abuse. Those are real conversations that should be had about, are we violating our own personal boundaries? Am I somehow infringing upon you in your life in some way? Where are we? Let's have a checkup. That's an okay conversation to have. It's a necessary conversation to have. You know, if at any point either side of the relationship has had that moment where, you know, we have things that happen in relationships that you don't like. Welcome to relationships. It's not happy all the time. No, everything isn't all smiley and roses. And sometimes you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach like, this fucking sucks. I don't like this. This is icky. The question is it icky because of something else that's interfering because of your old baggage, which is a very real possibility? Or is it icky because something now is happening that is wrong and is in some way violating something inside of you? And that's, you know, somebody you need to check with yourself. Where are you? How are you feeling? What's going on? And be as honest as you possibly can. I think the hardest thing is to be honest with yourself. To acknowledge and accept. For me personally, to acknowledge and accept that me, a person like me, very strong, capable, intelligent, you know, all of that, would be abused. And I think that it's hard for any of us to look at ourselves and be like, I could be abused. Because, you know, we paint a picture of what an abuse victim looks like.
Yeah,
and
I mean, yeah.
You can't possibly do that. It doesn't look like the burning bed. That's not what it always looks like.
Nope.
You know, it's not Farrah Fawcett. Yes, I'm showing my age, people. Fuck you all. The point is that everybody has the possibility of being abused and the possibility of being an abuser. It can happen. You don't know when it is. This is a time when everybody needs to just check with themselves, think about their relationship, their past, their current potential, you know, and have this really honest moment and then have a discussion. If you can't have this discussion with your partner, that to me is a huge sign.
It is. I like to give out some resources.
Please.
So I'll tweet these later. And on Twitter, I am CA Kink Lover. And but the National Leather Association International is a pretty great website. It's a little muddy once you get around in there. But and both the websites I'm going to give out, they're pretty cool because both of them have safe exits on them. So what that means is if you are in a situation where you are worried, and maybe you have, by the way, another sign, you have a partner who's looking at your browser history and that kind of thing. Both these websites offer ways you can click and immediately get you out of the website. And they also teach you how to clear your browser history, that kind of thing, if you're worried. But their URL is NLAIDVproject.us. And I'll tweet these later, and I'm sure both the ladies here will tweet them. And also that's a kink domestic violence website. So that is a kink related site. Also, just for straight up DV, www.thehotline.org, 1-800-799-7233. I do hesitate to encourage, I always should call someone. But again, sometimes if you For example, as a domestic violence crisis counselor, I was never trained in how to handle BDSM callers.
Right.
I was, in my sexual assault experience, I was trained in that. But straight up DV, it's a little bit better now. And this was 20 years ago when I got my first training. God, I'm old. But, you know.
Experienced. Wise. Let's go with that, okay?
But again, please look at those resources. The National Leather Association actually has brochures that you could print. So if you do know of someone that you're concerned about, print a brochure and give it to that individual. Just say, hey, just take a look at this. Nice, safe way to be a little bit of a hero without interfering.
Yeah, and for me, just so you know, the most important thing is that you can print out the brochure, you can give them the link, whatever, whatever, wherever. Give it to them and walk away and accept that that's it.
Yes.
That's it. You can't badger somebody into doing it. You can't badger somebody to leave their abuser. You just can't. It's not going to work. They'll go back.
Yeah,
they
yes,
will.
They will.
I'm sorry. I hate to say it. I mean, you know, you've seen it, I'm sure, with physical abuse. You probably did it with your own. I did it with my own. It's one of those things. You go back. Hate to say it. Wish it weren't true. But it is. So as much as you want to save whomever, because we all do, especially if it's somebody that you love and care about and you don't understand how they can possibly do this. I don't understand. I don't understand how she could allow herself to be like that. She's so XYZ. Just know that there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you can do what you can, but you can't force them. Lead a horse to water. Can't force them to drink. That's right. I'm a horse.
Look out for those links. And even if right now you can't think of someone who could need it, bookmark it. Fucking save that information. You never know when you might need it.
Yeah, we'll get off the air and I'll get the links and I'll tweet them too. So yeah. We'll be good. We'll be tweeting freakies.
And even though you do give up on that person when they do reach out to you, you know,
just be
however
accepting.
Time, be there.
Yeah.
Just be there.
We're officially out of time. Now we're going to do that wrap-up thing that Petzer was talking about last night. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tamara, thank you so much for coming
so
on. This
glad,
was wonderful.
Yeah, so glad you came.
We're going to send out some information, links and stuff for people in the future. Next week, I'm actually not going to be on the
air.
You're
sick.
So that Nancy doesn't hear. I'm actually going to be in Boston next week, so I will not be on the air. But Nancy's decided I'll be sick.
Yeah.
Because that's working for her. And then the following week, we have a marriage and family therapist coming on to help discuss Polly. And then the following week, we have Dirty Lola and her Dirty Hubby coming on. We've got some shit coming down, people. Yep. You do not want to miss our awesome fucking show. But I'm Insidious Muse.
I'm Service Slut.
This is CA Kink Lover, or Tamara. And thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Wow. Show just flies. Tune into The Love Bite, where all your kinky desires come true, Sundays 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time at SkidRowStudios.com.